Item 3, from Corporation Counsel, requesting authorization to file a petition for review in the Wisconsin Supreme Court if the Court of Appeals rules adversely to Milwaukee County's adopted policy and ordinances regarding the pension multiplier in Stoker et al. V. Milwaukee County et al., case numbers 11CV18550. And at your July meeting, this item was laid over to the call of the chair.
All right, very good. So, yes, we did have this item before us in July. It was in anticipation of this sort of event occurring where we've got 30 days to determine our appeal, and we were at the time we were concerned that the August break could be an impediment to that. We are noticed for potential closed session on the item if people wish to discuss such matters that should not be discussed in open session, but if we could start with just a general overview in open session.
Mr. Chairman, a procedural matter, and also to notice Attorney Levy, who is handling these cases for us and has been before the committee before, is present and can
please join us.
Add any comments that are required, more particularly if you have strategic questions, for lack of a better word, for closed session.
Read the item.
The item's been read, right?
Yes.
Yes.
It was?
Yeah, it was read.
Oh. Yes. Oh, John and I were dreaming.
But what I wanted to say is that
tell me something new.
When this item
sorry, please, Mr. Grady.
When this item was before you before, we didn't have a decision. We do now have a decision. And because of that, I have submitted to you a substitute resolution. It basically just changes grammar and style to account for the fact that we do now have a decision. So regardless of what your decision is on the merits, I would at least ask you to substitute this one for the other one just for form purposes.
Very good. We also have two public comments. So if there is a decision to go into closed, we'll take the public comment first before we would do that. Are there any comments that you would offer in open session on the case?
Only that we have this 30-day timetable that we have to deal with. Something has to be filed by December 14th if we're going to file anything at all. And I'd like to reserve other comments for closed session.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Broderick.
It's my understanding that two courts, am I correct in saying that, have already ruled on this?
I'm not sure what you mean by have already ruled. This is the first case involving the multiplier. We had cases about issues such as the payment of the premium for Medicare Part B. That case went in favor of the county. We also had a case in federal court about whether retiree health insurance changes could be implemented for people who are already retired, and that case went in favor of the county at the trial court level and is currently on appeal in the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. I might add the first one I mentioned, the Part B case, went in favor of the county in the same Court of Appeals level in the state system that this case went against us.
And went against us according to who? I mean, there was no court ruling, but no. What went against
us? I'm sorry. Stoker says that, well, let me go back one step. In theory, there are four districts of the Court of Appeals for the state of Wisconsin, but they speak, as they say, in one voice, which means we have different judges in all these opinions.
Sure.
And in Stoker, that panel said that the elimination of county payment of the Part B, the Medicare Part B premium for retirees was permissible for people who had not retired as of the effective date of that rule change.
I'm sorry. I think you may have misspoke. In the
Federation of Nurses case.
That was the nurses case.
Not
I'm
in
sorry,
Stoker.
I misspoke.
In Plessy.
I misspoke. I'm sorry. That was the first case in the Court of Appeals. The federal case, which is still pending in their Court of Appeals, at the district court level said that the changes which imposed co-pays and other modifications to active employees' insurance could be applied to those retirees who were entitled to continue in the same plan as actives at county expense. Third case, Stoker, forgive me for my misspeaking earlier, the third case involves whether the multiplier for pension can be reduced for people who have not yet retired within a given set of criteria. And in that case, the Court of Appeals for Wisconsin, in theory, the same one that said you could stop Part B payments, says that you cannot change the multiplier for service that has not yet occurred.
Because it's a property right?
Well, it's this whole question of what's vested when.
So, my problem with the ordinance, as I'm reading it, is that we're being asked to send this on to the Supreme Court. If the appeals court acts as it seems we're expecting they might act.
Well, they did.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That was a court ruling that I was referring to at my original question. And my problem is that we're the Wisconsin Supreme Court, a neutral interpreter of law and finder of fact, and this, I'll admit, is an editorial, but as it has been historically, I'd be more comfortable supporting this. But unfortunately, as I have expressed in the past in cases like this, it seems to me, at least in my opinion, the majority of the court has been essentially purchased by special interests, Citizens United aside. And it was purchased to support its own ideological leanings. And this rankles me in ways I wish I could have the confidence in the court that I ought to, as a citizen, be able to have. But unfortunately, it seems that the majority of that court is so ideologically skewed that to send it there would perhaps be sending it into the teeth of a biased body that has already, in so many cases, expressed itself in ways that seem to be run contrary to the interests of the people of the state of Wisconsin. So I wanted to get that on the public record before we go into private session, the fact that I'll be opposing this on those grounds, because I simply don't have the confidence that the court has the objectivity that it has historically exhibited.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I would just like to say one thing, and that is I am here to follow your instructions. I'm not trying to hold any particular political position. It would be a bad idea if I did. And I don't want what I'm about to say to suggest that I'm disagreeing with anything you said, Supervisor Broderick. And what I neglected to do, and perhaps it's my own fault, is to mention one other case that has been kicking around all these opinions, just to inform you that it exists. There is a case called Loth versus City of Milwaukee, where the City of Milwaukee reduced retiree health care benefits for a certain category. And all I wanted to say was, in that case, the Supreme Court gave a unanimous opinion written by Chief Justice Abrahamson in favor of the city, maintaining the reduction. Again, I'm not trying to make this a political comment, but just to make sure we have all the issues on the record.
Were there other questions for open session? Otherwise, we've got two public comment cards.
I'd like to hear from the comments and then.
Sure. All right. We'll start with Mr. Jeff Weber from Wisconsin Federation of Nurses. Okay. And also David Eisner from AFSCME. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Supervisors. I'm Jeff Weber. I'm representing the Wisconsin Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals.
I'm Dave Eisner, representing AFSCME District Council 48.
Go ahead, Jeff. Gentlemen, this is not the first time this issue of the pension multiplier has been litigated. nor is it the first time it has been before this board. In the 90s, we had filed, actually this is our second case that my union has filed. In the 90s, one of our members filed a lawsuit when the pension multiplier was reduced, and we won at the circuit level and the appeals level. That's the Petone case. The Stoker case, part of that decision was based on the Stoker case was based in part on the Petone case. And the Stoker case, we won, Supervisor Broderick, you had mentioned, you know, at what levels, what courts. The circuit court ruled in our favor. The appeals court also ruled in our favor. Both cases. All of these rulings state the pension multiplier cannot be reduced without the employee's permission, and that the multiplier can only be reduced for new employees. We agree with that. New employees coming in are subjected to whatever multiplier that the board wishes to impose upon them, but not for employees that are already here working. You cannot reduce that pension multiplier without their permission. I urge this committee to reject this request to appeal. Do not lay this matter over, but reject it based on what the circuit and appeals courts have ruled on this matter and in previous cases. Thank you.
Chairman, supervisors, AFSCME District Council 48 also has a lawsuit on this topic that's held in abeyance pending the outcome of the Nurses Federation suit. And I would just like to, this is the actual Stoker decision from the appellate court. Just read a couple excerpts from that I think are pertinent to your discussion. This would be paragraph 4 on page 3 of the document. I'm going to just read some excerpts here. So 1945 Wisconsin laws, chapter 138, provided in relevant part that each member shall have a similar benefit contract and a vested right to such annuities and other benefits that shall not be diminished or impaired by subsequent legislation or by any other means without the member's consent. That is repeated throughout this decision and also in the circuit court decision. Now I want to jump to, this is page 17.
Mr. Eisner, yes. If you could give your original comments, because the opinion has been shared
okay.
with members, so Corp Counsel did provide
okay.
that.
Okay. Okay. And I was just going to mention that consent must be individual, not by collective bargaining. So yeah, my comment being then that, you know, this is a good decision. It affirms and clarifies the vested property rights issue, which this strictly is. And we urge you not to appeal this decision any further. To do so would be an unnecessary and unwise use of taxpayers' money. Thank you.
I appreciate it, gentlemen. Thank you. Supervisor Borkowski? I'm sorry. There may be a question for you.
Mr. Weber?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I have some questions.
Yes, sir.
In the testimony, I'm not familiar with that first person that your federation, this person, successfully litigated, you said. That was in the 90s?
Mr. Chairman, supervisors, I believe that was in the 90s. I'm sure Mr. Grady will be able to tell you exactly when it was. The case was Petone.
Okay.
Pam Petone.
Well, I've been around a while, and I don't remember it. So I guess that's why I'm curious. Why? So the board did not take it to the Supreme Court. We allowed it to get to appeals, and then the board said, okay, we're done?
The first case, yes. And again, Mr. Grady would be able to clarify that as well.
Actually, I'm not able to. I frankly don't remember this case at all. I'll have to look into it. I really don't. I don't dispute what he's saying. I just don't know.
Well, I think it's kind of important because, obviously there's precedence. And I'd like to understand the rationale why we didn't take it further. If we don't have the specifics, then I guess I'll... Mr. Grady, if I could ask you maybe at some time, obviously not right now, but maybe to put some stuff together on that, I'd be curious.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Weishan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
For Corp Counsel, I would just like him to, I guess, explain the process a little bit, and that is if the board, whether at this committee or on the board floor today, doesn't take any action, what is then the responsibility of both the county executive and the chairwoman in that process?
Mr. Chairman? There are two ways for the county to decide to take a petition for review to the Supreme Court, both set forth in the ordinance. One is by a full board of the county board to authorize that, or in the absence of action by the county board, the county executive together with the county board chair can jointly agree to authorize that. So it either requires full board action or requires the joint agreement of the county executive and county board chair. If neither of those occurs, no petition is filed.
Thank you. Just on this one, I think there needs to be some little clarification too. No appeal is free, and I believe in the fiscal note that our attorney is being paid by the county mutual. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I guess, do we have a dollar total on what this has cost us from circuit court, appellate court, to now what a Supreme Court challenge would cost or be charged to the county mutual?
Mr. Chairman, I don't. Mr. Levy may be able to answer that, but you probably have an estimate of what the fees would be for the petition, I would guess, and if it was granted, the follow-up briefing and oral argument. But
I send my bills to Wisconsin County Mutual. I don't know what their arrangement is with my clients. And in any of the cases where I work with the insurance company, they say I should stay out of that. I can tell you what filing fees are, such as I believe it's $250 to file a petition. Printing costs, those bills go over my desk. Relatively minimal. I think the cost of the fuels was about $1,000, but I can't tell you what the arrangement is between the county and the insurance company about attorney's fees.
Well, can we? I would hope we get some clarification, because if you want, if there is just a small percentage chance that this would be winnable at the Supreme Court level, you would have to balance that at the cost to us if you're, you know, the insurance company isn't doing this out of the kindness of their heart. I'm sure there's a deductible and, you know, amount that Milwaukee County would have to pay, or at least it would be sort of like taken off our tab kind of approach. And so I would think that we would need that financial information prior to making any decision.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Gray.
The attorney's fees are applied to the county's deductible, which comes from a reserve fund made of county tax levy. I don't know. I don't want to speak for Mr. Levy. I don't know what his hourly rate is. I don't know how many hours it's going to take him and his associates to write briefs. But as a very wild guess, and he can yell at me if he wants, I'm thinking that you know, you're talking somewhere in the vicinity of maybe, if it goes all the way to the end, maybe $30,000, something in that ballpark, in terms of attorney's fees. That's very rough. It could be less, could be more.
Okay. No, go ahead. If there's something to add, feel free. I see that, and I think that's an important issue to have in hand before we would make a decision to appeal, as what is the financial cost. And also, just in this decision and some of these other cases that have come up, I think what is different about this and why I don't think that we would win, and why we have, if, you know, in the decisions that I've read both at the circuit court and the appellate court, and what makes us different than these other cases, is that this is directly about how the pension payment is calculated for an employee versus a health insurance item, whether it be the Medicare premium or you know, a disability, that, at least from my reading and stuff, that the court looks at as an additional two. So that's why, you know, they feel it's okay to that you so-called have to earn things, or it's okay to make some changes, because it is, I would say, separate from the pension, which is clearly stated as what was read before us, that, you know, law is pretty clear that you can't change stuff. And just this 2% multiplier comes from, you know, our changes we made back in 2000. And we had all the experts that said, you know, this was fine. Then when, you know, we had the whole pension issue come up, we spent literally hundreds of thousands of dollars to have some of the best experts in the country look at this and say, can you change this? And their advice was, no, you can't. And then you can only change it prospectively going forward. And that's exactly what we did for non-representative employees at the time. And then it took another 3 years through our labor agreements to do it prospectively, you know, for new hires through those represented employees. And in fact, our position in the Mercer Human Resources lawsuit was we couldn't change these things. And we paid a lot of money to a very expensive law firm out of Texas that said, yeah, that's right, you can't change these things, and this is your damages that you've incurred because of their malfeasance. And this multi-billion-dollar corporation also had their high-priced lawyers look at this and said, yeah, we owe them because they can't change it. So then they wrote us a check for $45 million. And then we went and changed it anyways. And then we end up in court, and then the circuit court has said you can't change it. The appeals court has said you can't change it. So I really don't feel the need to go to the Supreme Court when we've literally spent the last 10 years, you know, litigating this. And like I said, there have been some very, very smart people have looked at this and said you can't change it. So I'm willing to go with their judgment, and I think actually rather than incur this and actually burden us with this anymore, I think a motion to lay the item over is appropriate at this time. It will be, it's time to move on. The clock will run out, and there's no need even to torture ourselves anymore on this stuff.
Yes, Mr. Grady.
Just a procedural point. I would ask the committee to substitute the substitute resolution. Then if you want to lay it over, you want to adopt it, you want to reject it, fine. But if you don't do that, you'll have a resolution that doesn't really read correctly when it gets to wherever it gets to. So just a request that I would make just to clean up the record. Okay.
Is there a motion to substitute the corrected or more current version?
Yes, Mr. Chair, ask unanimous consent to substitute the substitute resolution for the original resolution.
Yeah, we never do that. We should do that more often. I'd ask unanimous consent to substitute the substitute resolution for the old one.
Are you a lawyer?
Hearing no objection, it is substituted. Yes. May have a problem.
Chairman, supervisors, I believe that because Supervisor Washon's motion to lay over takes precedent, he has to withdraw that motion, and then we can proceed, and then that motion
that would
to
be fine. I'll withdraw it. Right. Supervisor Staskunas' motion.
All right. The motion to lay over is withdrawn at this time. If with the unanimous consent of the body, we would substitute the substitute resolution if there is no objection. Seeing no objection, it is substituted. The substitute is now before the body. Supervisor Weishan moves layover.
There we go.
Substitute. Supervisor Staskunas.
A couple of questions and comments. One, if I heard Supervisor Weishan's correct, I guess once we lose from here on out, I guess, at the circuit court and the appeals court, you will never support going to the Supreme Court again, because once two courts rule against you, you should really just drop the whole thing. That's sort of what I heard you say. Secondly, I guess I would like to listen to our attorney in closed session before I make a decision. Maybe Supervisor Weisshahn has more experience reading court decisions than I do, but I would like to hear what our attorney has to say. And lastly, if we're Supervisor Weisshahn seems quite concerned about the money, I heard that we can invest $30,000, and this substitute resolution says we can save $4 million a year for, I don't know how many years, 20, 30, 40, a lot of years, millions and millions of dollars. So I don't know. It seemed to make sense that we ought to at least kick it around a little bit before we move on. So actually, I'm going to move that we go into closed session.
Okay. Supervisor Staskunas moves that we adjourn in a closed session under provisions of Wisconsin Statute Section 19.85, Parent 1, Parent G, for the purpose of receiving oral or written advice from legal counsel concerning strategy with respect to pending or possible, well, the possible appeal. Is that appropriate?
This matter is appropriate for closed session. I'm just thinking about process. And the clerk is looking at me the same way. We do have a motion to layover, which I think takes precedence over pretty much everything else.
Really?
I don't have my Chapter 1 in front of me, but I think Supervisor Weisshahn would at least.
It seems that the that I don't find them to be in conflict, because the to vote on the motion for layover, members may wish to obtain information in closed session that would inform their opinion on whether or not they wish to lay over.
Chairman.
Supervisor
Weisshahn? To make this easier and to accommodate my colleague, withdraw the layover motion right now. We can go into closed session, and then on exiting closed session, we'll deal
Very
with
good.
The issue.
Thank you for that cooperation. The motion for layover is withdrawn at this time. The motion to adjourn in closed session by Supervisor Staskunas is before the body. Mr. Grady, I believe it's appropriate that we adjourn in closed session. It has been noticed that way, and that was under the advice of Corporation Counsel.
Yes, this is appropriate for closed session. I think the point of the closed session is to hear about the strengths and weaknesses of the arguments that we may or make if we file a petition.
Thank you. With that, the motion for closed session is before us.
On the motion to go into closed session, Supervisors Borkowski.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Weisshahn.
Aye.
Broderick.
Aye.
Rainey.
Aye.
Staskunas.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to go into closed session is approved.
Okay. Thank